welcome to the Farming on Purpose podcast, a podcast for farmers and ranchers ready to shift for a stronger future. Today's challenges in agriculture are new, but the grit and determination required to be successful are not. On the Farming on Purpose podcast, you'll hear how producers of all sizes and practices are moving mountains for things they believe in, all in the name of an industry that keeps growing and innovating for a stronger food system and stronger farm families. I'm your host, Lexi Wright, and I'm excited to discuss where producers are finding success, challenging the status quo, striving for better, and keeping our heritage alive, all while producing the food we depend on. Welcome back to Farming on Purpose. Before we dive into today's topic, I am going to announce the extension of our giveaway, primarily because I did a terrible job of talking about it. This is the first time I believe I've even talked about it on the podcast. So if you are on my email list, you probably saw that we are doing a giveaway. We're going to be giving away Megan Gates' cookbook, Foundations of Beef, a Carhartt gift card, and some Farming on Purpose merch to the lucky winner. You have until the end of April to get entered, and the easiest way to get entered is by reviewing the podcast on Apple Podcasts or by sharing something about the podcast on social media. If you're listening and you take a screenshot, or if you share some of our reels to your stories on Instagram or however you want to do that, just give me a tag and I can mark down that to get you entered. And I would love to have you guys enter that. For one, it helps the podcast grow and helps me be able to continue to put together stories and find guests to bring these episodes to you every week. So if you could take a moment and do that, get entered to win that. Megan's cookbook is awesome. I'm buying a copy for myself as well and would love to be able to gift that to a lucky winner. So you have until the end of April to do that. Thank you so much for participating. Welcome back to Farming on Purpose. Today I have Shawnee Christensen here from KB Farm and Pantry with me today. And I'm really excited to have Shawnee here to share their unique story of how they came to agriculture and owning a whole farm. Shawnee and her husband have 5 kids, and they have a very unique path to the business that they have today. So, Shawnee, I will let you fill in the blanks. Tell us about yourself and kind of what kickstarted this dream and what the journey has been like to get here.
So it's a really interesting one. We didn't grow up with agriculture in our family. I think the last ones to really be a part of agriculture was our great-grandparents. And really, that was more homesteading. It wasn't like they were actual farmers, or they were just raising what they needed for their families. And so we had 5 kids. I think our youngest was probably a year or two old. Our oldest was 7, almost 8. And we were very sports minded. I grew up in sports. I mean, you woke up to go play sports. You went to bed right after you finished playing sports. Like everything revolved around sports. I knew nothing about animals other than dogs. And so we started playing sports at 3 years old with our kids. They were doing great. And just one day we decided we were done. We didn't like the environment for our children in sports. It wasn't a bad one, but we knew there was something more we wanted. So I made a really rash decision to go buy some lambs for kids for 4-H, not knowing anything about lambs. My husband got home and said, "Hey, what's going on?" And I said, "Oh, by the way, we're driving 3 hours north. We're going to go pick up lambs." And so we had had chickens at this point, and we had a little mini horse. So, I mean, we were dipping our toes, but nothing was pushing us really to get into agriculture other than, you know, we thought it was fun. We thought it was cool to have the livestock and the animals. And so we go get these 4-H lambs, and my kids fell in love. They absolutely loved working with their lambs and being around it. And so then we thought, oh, well, let's get a pig and let's get a cow, and we'll just raise it for our own family and process it. And that turned into a few family and friends saying, hey, will you raise a pig for me? Will you raise a cow for me? And we're like, okay, you know, yeah, sure, why not? What's a couple more? And then we quickly started getting more interest, and it was like, okay, well, you know, so and so wants a pig. Maybe I can reach out to a few more people, see if a few more people want pigs. And I'm the type of person that I just jump into something and I don't think about what the consequences are or how I'm going to accomplish that. And so again, my husband comes home and I said, by the way, I just bought breeding pigs. And he goes, why are we going to breed pigs? And I said, oh, I don't know that, you know, instead of buying pigs to raise them, we'll just breed them. And he's like, do you know how to do that? And I said, no, not really. And so that's just kind of how it started. And then we kind of started looking into cows. Okay, what breed of cows do we want? I don't know. This person's doing this and this seems real cool. So let's jump into that. And I mean, 5 years later, and we've got a farm. I don't know.
Sounds like such a hectic story, but I think there's like two kind of entrepreneurs out there. There's like the tactical strategic ones, and then there's the ones who are like, just take it and run. I don't care. We're doing this. Come on, get in the car. We're driving now.
Yeah. I mean, and there's times we've bought things that I don't even have pens. Like, I don't even have the materials to put up the pens. It's still to this day. I mean, 2 weeks ago, I got chickens. I go, oh crap, I don't have a brooder box. Well, I guess we're going to build them because the chickens just arrived today. So, I mean, we're not the planners at all.
I mean, it keeps life fun for sure, right? Keeps it entertaining.
That's what my husband says.
Yeah, I bet he does. Well, you said something there when you kind of were like deciding that first transition that you wanted something different than what you were currently experiencing with sports and that kind of stuff. And you said it's not that there was anything bad necessarily about that environment, but you wanted something different. You knew there was something better or something else you wanted to experience. So what was that kind of process like of really changing your lifestyle? It's not a small change to go from everyday sports, five kids, especially to a different kind of lifestyle of raising agriculture and being very tied to home and being at home often and a lot.
It was a huge lifestyle change. I mean, I joke around and I tell people, oh, we went from Converse shoes to cowboy boots. And it really was true. I mean, within a very short, maybe a year or less, I mean, everything from what we ate to what we wore to what we did, our family activities, everything changed. And I mean, in sports, it was great. Like, it teaches your kids really good work ethics. And I mean, you have to be physically tough to play sports, but it just the experiences we felt were, you know, everybody was in it for themselves, and our kids were only little. I mean, we had an 8-year-old, and parents, you know, didn't want to share who were teaching their kids or coaching their kids or where they got this. Like, it was very closed off, and for us, it felt like it was in it for yourself. And we get into agriculture, and you know, these people that are going around all over the state and winning these jackpots completely took our kids in. Hey, you need to do this. Come to my house. Let's do this. And for us, that was a huge push. Like, oh my gosh, you know, people are welcoming our family in who knows nothing. We knew nothing at that point, and brought our family in. Hey, you need to feed this. This is where you can buy it. Call this person. They can help you. And it was just a huge eye-opening experience that, hey, this is where our kids really need to be. And that was honestly the push. And when our kids said, hey, we would rather stop playing sports and we'd rather start showing animals, we're like, okay, you know, if they wanted to play sports, we would have let them. But they wanted the livestock, and we said, okay, we'll do it. And that was the huge push for us, honestly, was our kids changed. You know, they were the ones wanting to get up and go feed animals before school. They were the ones wanting to spend time outside with their livestock. And they were the ones that were like, hey, why don't we try this? Or we want this animal on our farm. We're like, all right, let's do it. Why not?
That agency and seeing young kids kind of take that on, I feel like is so inspiring to see them truly want to be involved in making decisions and taking responsibility. Just watching them light up like that is one of my favorite parts about seeing kids in agriculture. So I'm so glad that you guys got to experience such a welcoming community when you did have that transition. I know, you know, sometimes the ag industry gets a bad rap for being closed off, but it sounds like you guys had a wonderful experience of being welcomed in.
We did. And I would say within a 6-month period, our kids completely changed because of how welcoming people were. I mean, our kids were asking, hey, can we go to so-and-so's house? We want to go see the lambs, work the lamb. And they were totally, here's my home, come in. Here's my phone number, call me whenever you need. And it didn't matter time or day. Like, they were very, very welcoming.
That's awesome. Well, you guys, it sounds like have grown a lot, getting different kinds of livestock over that time period and then taking on customers or feeding animals for your friends and family that they wanted to be able to use those animals for their own food. What was that transition like of like, it's not just fun anymore. It's also like a whole other thing to manage. What did that look like?
It was a lot. It was a lot. There were a lot of overwhelming moments because we don't know, you know, the animal anatomy and it, you know, an animal would get cut. What do we do? Like, and so as we're growing and we're adding more livestock to our farm, it was a huge change because we love to go camping. If we weren't home playing sports, we were camping. And so just, hey, we can't make this family event or I'm sorry, we're late because, you know, something happened drastic on the farm. And so it was a huge change for not only us, but our extended family as well, because we were always late to family events anyways, but now we're extra late. And it honestly was a completely different lifestyle because now our first priority is our livestock. I mean, still to this day, my kids know if your animals have not eaten, you're not eating. And that goes for breakfast, that goes for dinner, that goes for if you didn't check on your livestock in the middle of the day, you're not getting lunch. And so for even my littlest kid who was 1 and 2 years old, he knew his job and what livestock he had to go check. And if he didn't do it, he wasn't going to get fed. And that sounds really mean, but again, our big push was our kids wanted this. And so we sat them down, hey, if we're going to do this as a family, we all have to be on board with what sacrifices this is going to take. And I mean, we still have this conversation about every other month. If we want to do this, this is a family effort. This is not a mom effort. This is not a dad effort. This isn't only kids. This is that every single person has to be 100% involved in this or it just doesn't work. And so our kids know, but they also agree and understand that our livestock comes first. And in order to grow the livestock and to fulfill those orders, we have to care for our animals more than we care for ourselves.
I think having it be a family operation from such a young age is one of the most unique things about farming, that kids are shown the ropes, whatever it looks like on your farm or a different person's farm. They're shown it at a very young age. They're right there beside you, learning from you, learning how to do the things. What was that like for you, knowing that you're kind of learning at the same time?
I'm a fake it till you make it girl, and I'm still faking it. And so it's been interesting because kids will ask questions and we're like, well, I don't know, this is just what we were taught, so this is how we were doing it. Well, why are we doing it that way? I have no idea. Okay. This is just what someone told us to do, so that's how we're gonna do it. But it's been fun because my oldest is only 12. My youngest is 6 right now, and they can go out and do things. You know, when we first started, we had 300 chickens. It was a lot of chickens for not knowing how to sell eggs. And we had chickens flying over the neighbor's fence constantly. And so someone was like, you've got to clip the wings. Okay. Well, I didn't know how to do that. My kids didn't know how to do that, but we learned together. And now my kids can go and do that themselves. It's not something I have to be present for. And so I think that's been the most enjoyable part, is because we're learning side by side, they're able to grow a lot more. And they're way more independent because it's not just mom said to go do this. It's, hey, I learned how to do this. I can go do this.
That's a great way to look at it. I think learning alongside each other and then being able to have the ability to go do something yourself is just so empowering to a kid to feel that like sense of accomplishment and confidence of I know how to do this. Now, you mentioned you had neighbors, chickens flying over the fence. Hi. Eventually, you guys grew to the point where you had to move. Tell me about what that experience was like and how that has gone.
So that is actually a really fun one. So we were renting some property, and it was about 3 acres, but in total we probably used about an acre, and we were renting from a friend, and that's where everything started. We were like, okay, they have pens already. We got the lambs, we got the pony, we started growing, we got the pigs, we brought in cows, and we got to the point where we're like, okay, we can't live in the area anymore because we're outgrowing it. And my husband wanted to start growing hay. So he started buying equipment. We're the backwards people. We buy everything and then we go, oh, shoot, we need the land. We have all the livestock and the tractors. Now we need the land. And so we started looking and we found what we thought was perfect. It was 320 acres. We were going to farm it. It had an ag well on it. Like, it just looked like the dream come true. And we were under contract for over a year. And all said and done, out of the 300 acres, we could only grow on 20 acres because there's so much salt. Like, we were just finding out so many things we never knew to even look at. We just thought, if there's an ag well and it's been previously grown, we can grow on it. So anyways, long story short, after a year of thinking we're moving, the contract canceled. We canceled it and said, you know, God has something better for us. I don't know what it is or where it is, but we're just gonna pray and hope that it works. And we ended up moving out of where we were into a toy hauler on our friend's acre. And we lived there for 7 months. So we're homeschooling in a toy hauler. We brought all of our livestock to our friend's house, and we lived there for 7 months, not knowing where we're going. And that was really hard because we had no direction. We had no purpose. Like, we felt really lost for a while. Honestly, the prayers worked, and God had a plan, because within a four week period, we found where we were supposed to go and we were moved in. And it just, I mean, everything aligned. And so we moved 4 hours away from everything we know, away from all of our family. We knew nothing about up here. We knew maybe two people. I mean, it was a big, I've never moved far from my family. I've always been in a 10-minute radius. So moving 4 hours was a really big shock for me. But it has been the greatest blessing of our lives. And so now we're where we're at, but it's given us the vision and the opportunity to go, oh, now we want this. Oh, that, you know, okay, so we learned something being here the last year. Now we want this. And so against my husband's wishes, I am now trying to find more farmland. And so it's been a really big growing experience because I like my bubble, and I've had to really, and my kids, we've all had to come out of everything we knew and completely start from scratch in an area we really had at the time zero support in. And so it's been a fun one.
I feel like moving, especially if you're moving away from that support system, is always a challenge. And it becomes even more so when you have kids and a farm, because it all falls back on you guys. You know, it's like there's no relief system built in here. It's just us. So that's really challenging. But you mentioned that you guys are looking for more farmland, or you are at least.
I've convinced him to move now, and he's okay with it.
That's good. I think that that is a struggle that a lot of couples go through, though, is maybe like being mismatched in their goals for what the operation looks like or what they would like it to see it grow into. How have you guys juggled that and kind of communicated to move forward and balance that out?
My husband's a planner, right? And I'm the one that just says, let's just jump in and we'll figure it out as we go. And so one of the biggest things we struggled with growing our operation is I don't want to be that farmer that has the extremely high prices. Like, I want to make good quality meat as affordable as possible. But because we haven't had that opportunity to grow our own hay or graze, I mean, we bring in amazing quality hay, but our prices are so high that our prices to sell are even higher. And it just, that's been our biggest struggle. So whereas I'm jumping in saying, hey, we need more cows. Like, I can't have enough cows. I'm always sold out of beef. And my husband looks at it as, well, we need farmland. We need grazing land. We need something to make it more cost productive. And so that's been our struggle, is I'm looking for the land, he's looking for grazing or growing. And so we're trying to find something that both fits everything we need, not coming from agriculture and being those first generation farmers and having to start completely from scratch. It's been really hard to find something that fits what we need in an affordable price range.
Yes, I think you just voiced the struggle of every farmer today.
Yeah.
Whether they're first generation or not. And first generation, it is particularly hard because you don't necessarily have those connections when you start of like, oh, well, I know Jim down the road is, you know, maybe thinking about starting to rent out his pasture. Like, you don't have that connection with them right away as like people who have been in it longer might. But the farmland situation and the ranching land situation has never been as dire as it is right now. So everybody feels you on that one, I think.
It's a struggle.
Yeah. And there just doesn't seem to be much that we can do about it or have any sort of say in it, which is, you know, I guess farming at its core. It's just so ingrained in the rest of everything that's going on, whether it's government or society, or you just don't have a lot of control on some of those outside factors. But tell me a little bit more about how your products and the things that you offer has changed over time, what you guys have gone through to grow and expand what you offer.
So when we first started, we just figured, hey, we're going to, you know, you go to the local feed store, buy the feed the animals, and life's great. And that, I mean, it worked great for what we were doing at that time. And as time's gone on and we've learned more about pesticides and we've learned more about non-GMO versus GMO, and really it comes down to what the people want. I mean, it's been a very big learning experience just between feeding cow hay and a better quality hay. We've seen a big difference in our livestock. And that's been a growing pain, because in farming, it takes money to make money. And so fronting the bill for feed when you know, hey, this is $15 a bag and this is $25 a bag, why am I going to pay $25 when I can pay $15? And so that's been a big learning experience for us, because we started out, hey, we're going to go to Tractor Supply. We had really good relationships with the managers there. We could call them. We had each other's cell phones. And that was amazing for that time. As we've grown, we've realized, hey, we want something better. We want something that we can say, you know, our feed comes from a really high quality source. And not only are we Are we feeding it better for our operation? But we're supporting our local farmers as well. So everything's staying in this tight little niche. And so that's been really fun, as we've been able to reach out to local farmers and say, hey, this is what we're looking for. Can you provide this? Absolutely. Or no, sorry, that's not what we do. And so it's been a learning experience, because like I said, we don't know the biology, the chemistry, the science behind all of that. It's been a lot of trial and error. And there's been a year or two that we lost our butts on spending all this money because we thought, hey, we're going to feed these pigs a non-GMO feed. Well, that was $5 to $10 more per 50 pounds. And guess what? We didn't sell it like we thought we could. And so, we lost lots of money thinking, hey, we're going to be this niche. And it didn't work out. And so it's been a very big learning curve trying to figure out what is best for the animals, not what is best for me. Because really that's the top priority, is what do my livestock need to grow, to survive, to live? You know, winter conditions are different than summer conditions, so I need to feed them a little differently in winter when the snow's here and they're cold versus the hot and the heat. And so it's been a really big learning curve for us. And some years we've done great. And some years we look back going, crap, what? We should have never done that. We should have just stuck with what we were told or what we knew, or why did we change that? Because it just didn't work.
I think that in direct-to-consumer agriculture, it feels really empowering because you have control more so over what you're doing. That way, you have more control over what your prices are because you can set them versus, you know, just going to the co-op or whatever to sell your stuff at a commodity price. But at the same time, it comes with that level of risk of, you know, you don't know what kind of niche you're going to find or not find. You kind of just have to do it. You have to test it out. And sometimes those tests fail. And that's really discouraging as a farmer who is looking at the finances. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, people who decide to go the route that you guys are, where you're direct to consumer and you're selling those things and forming these relationships, you are going to have such a stronger business model from those things that you learn along the way. It's going to make a huge difference for you guys as you grow. But tell me a little bit about your marketing and how you have found the people that are buying your products, especially now that you're in a completely different location.
That, I swear, everything we do is a struggle. So that's been a struggle as well, because so when we first started, it was just word of mouth. We had a friend here, a family member there. And so it was sporadic, but it was enough to say, hey, this is worth it. Let's keep going. And then I was like, okay, the cool thing now is to start an Instagram. We'll start an Instagram. So we started that, and it's not like it took off or was doing phenomenal. And, you know, I reached 100,000 views and the orders were piling in. It didn't work that way. We had one little mom pop store reach out to us, and that kind of gave us the confidence to say, okay, I'm now going to reach out, because I didn't know what I was doing. I haven't grown up in this. I was only a couple years deep into this. And if you would have asked me questions, I mean, I faked it until I thought I made it. And that was just the best I could do, because I didn't know the answers. I just was repeating what I had been told or what I had read on the internet. And so we started selling to this little mom and pop in our town where we lived. And we thought, oh, well, let's reach out to a few more. And to be honest, most of the people were like, no, sorry. We buy it from Shamrock, or we buy from, you know, one of the bigger companies and they ship it from the Midwest and your prices are just too high. And we're like, well, all right. So then I thought, well, let's try a website. And so we took quite a few classes from the Five Marys Ranch, and that just kind of gave us more confidence. Okay, I'm gonna do a website. I've never done technology in my life, but I built our website just thinking, okay, I've got to learn this, because if I need to make changes, I need to make changes right now. I can't wait for someone to do it. And so we thought, okay, we'll make a website. And I thought, oh, it's just gonna take off. Like, once I get it on there, it's gonna go. And it didn't go as planned at all. And we still get a few orders here and there from people that have never heard us, which is great. But again, it didn't go as planned. I thought, if I do this, it'll take off like everybody else's. And so we did the Instagram, we did the website, and I thought, okay, now what am I missing? Why is it not? I see all these farmers and ranchers that are, and I've watched their either YouTube or their Instagram or whatever accounts just take off and blow up. And I'm like, what am I doing? I don't know how to market, to be honest. And so it's been a huge trial and error with that as well. But we've just had to get our name out there and stop being afraid to say, hey, we are first generation farmers. I know we're new, but we have some phenomenal products. And so it's become an education process for us to educate others on honestly what little we do know. But it's also been a confidence thing. Like, I had to be confident to say, hey, I raise livestock and I grow some phenomenal products. Would you like to try them? And putting myself out there was really hard because I am a loud and obnoxious person in general. I like attention. I like talking. But to talk about something like our farm products was really hard for me because I didn't know how other people thought about our farm products. And I mean, it tasted great for our family, but what did other people think? I didn't know. And so it was a huge, I had to learn to, it's okay to talk about our farm products. And my kids are the best at it. We were at Cal's Ranch last week and they're telling the guy at the gun counter, hey, we raise meat. You should buy our meat. I'm like, oh my gosh, like it's just easy. Like that's free marketing right there. And my kids will tell anybody, yeah, we raise livestock. Here's my mom's number. You should call her. And so we're not the best marketers. And we really have no marketing plan other than we're putting ourselves out there on Instagram. We've got the website. All of my kids have KB Farm shirts. They love to wear the KB Farm shirts. That's all I wear now. And so it's triggered conversations where we're at. And people are like, hey, are you a farmer? Do you raise meat? Hey, let me get your phone number. And so I really don't have a great answer for you because we struggle in that area of how do we market our meat. And so I put stickers on everything. I wear shirts everywhere. And my kids love to tell everyone that will listen about our farm products.
I love that you share that that's a struggle that you experience, because I think there's a lot of pressure on entrepreneurs in general and farm entrepreneurs to feel like they have that all figured out and to hit the ground running. And it does seem like it's easy to just post an Instagram video and boom, your business is like booming. But again, not always how it works out. That's just not real life, unfortunately. And the comparison mindset that we can get as entrepreneurs from that is really challenging. It makes you question every decision that you're making. It's like, well, why I believe in this, but why do other people not understand why I believe in it, or why do they not agree with me? And then I completely sympathize and understand that struggle of like not understanding what the timeline is going to look like, where it's like, you know, we're trying to market, we're trying to do the things, but we just maybe haven't found exactly that thing yet that's going to really catch people's attention or make it really take off. But I love what you said about your kids there. I think if we could all adopt the confidence of like a 5-year-old and
what
they believe about themselves and what they do, then we'd be all much better off instead of let that doubt creep in.
That's the thing. I don't know where my kids got it from, but they are so proud of what we've done and where we've come from, because this is not, like I said, we didn't grow up in agriculture. I grew up playing sports like 20 out of the 24 hours of the day. Like, we were very much involved in sport. and to completely uproot everything I know, completely change my lifestyle, completely change my mindset to now doing farming and learning about farming, because we're still learning. We don't know. We're only 5 years into this. And so we're still on that struggle bus. And my kids don't act like we are on the struggle bus. Here I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't really know what we're doing, but here we go. And my kids are like, hey, you should buy our meat. We have really good meat. I'm like, oh my gosh, like that was so easy. Why can't we just, we should be proud of what we're doing.
Absolutely. And it feels hard because you experience all of the like pitfalls of that growth, whereas they probably don't see it that way. To them, it's all like, we look at what we did. Like, look how far we've come. They remember all those successes and they're just not as jaded as we are as adults sometimes, I think, and worried about the failures as much. But it's so cool that they're able to help you out with your marketing and wear the shirts. I love the shirts. They're really cute, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah. You mentioned about building your website and doing some courses or mentorship from Five Mary's Farms. You have lots of different things on your website. So let's maybe talk about how that has grown and the resources that you provide there have developed as the farm has grown as well.
So we've got two sides to our business. So we have KV Farm and Pantry. So we've got the farm and we've got the pantry. And the pantry kind of started, so a little back history on that. When my husband, my oldest was 17 months at the time and I was 36 weeks pregnant. He had lost his job. And he worked 3 hours away. He was home. He would leave to go there about either late Sunday night or early Monday morning. And he would either come home Friday night or Saturday night. And so we really got to see him maybe 24 hours, if we were lucky, 36 hours. And when that happened, I mean, we were living paycheck to paycheck like everyone. And we had nothing in our pantry. I'm not joking. I had spaghetti, noodles, and I had jam. And those definitely don't go together. And so the pantry side of our business started because there's got to be more. Like, I never want to be in that situation where I don't have anything to feed my kids. And so we started learning about food storage, and that just was a whole nother deep dive into something that I had grown up with my mom canning and having some sort of food reserve in a pantry, but it wasn't something I really knew about until it was, oh no, we have no food and we have no money to go buy food. What are we going to feed our children? And so the whole pantry side of our business took off because I never wanted to be in a situation where my kids didn't have food again. And so it was about a 10-year learning experience where we learned how to preserve our own food. We learned how to garden. We learned how to buy in bulk and how to preserve that for long-term food storage. And that turned into teaching classes where during COVID, I had, it's probably not good to admit, but I had 150 people or more in my home teaching classes every single month for about 2 years, where I was teaching them, hey, how do you grind that wheat and turn it into pasta or to make the bread? And what do you do with beans? Like, it just kind of took off. And so we started doing education videos. And then I wrote a food storage book on start to finish. Like, what do you do? How do you use it? Why do you need it? How do you store it? How do you preserve it? And so the farm kind of took one direction and the pantry kind of took another. And so sometimes we focus more on the farm and sometimes we focus more on the pantry side, but it also goes hand in hand because people will look at it, hey, a whole cow is a lot of meat for some people. What do I do with it? Okay, well, you can bottle the meat. You can freeze dry the meat. You can dehydrate the meat. We can turn it into beef jerky. You know, there's so many things you can do with it to preserve it. It shouldn't be overwhelming to buy a whole cow. How do you use all those meats? What are those cuts of meats for? Okay, well, this is what you can do it. You know, you can bottle stew meat. You can bottle hamburger meat. We've put steaks in mason jars and bottled it. And so it's two different things that we took off on the website, but it also goes hand in hand because you need to know. I don't ever want someone to buy a whole chicken and go, how do I cook it? What do I do with it? I don't want someone to buy a whole cow and it goes freezer burnt because they look at it and go, that's a lot of meat. And I really only use steaks and hamburgers. I don't know what to do with the rest. And so while the website kind of took two different spots, we tried to kind of merge them both so that people knew, hey, there's so many options. Don't let it go to waste.
Absolutely. And I think it perfectly encompasses the food disconnect that we see in our culture today, where we're so used to buying those products that we don't even know where they necessarily originate from or what kind of processing goes into them to get them to that point. Whereas when you start diving into some of that stuff and doing some of that processing yourself and preservation yourself, a whole new world opens up of understanding those food ingredients and those base ingredients and what you can do with them to make the most of them. And then the farm, it's just like taking another step back. It's like, okay, now we know how to process these base ingredients. Now, where do the base ingredients come from? How do we get them to begin with? And I love when you can paint the whole picture like that, like you guys are doing. It's like, here's step one. We're buying these animals. We're breeding these animals even. And then we're going and we're taking it all the way down to how you store them in your pantry and use them throughout the year for your regular cooking. That is what is so inspiring to me, is drawing those connections, because we're just so distanced from them anymore.
We are. And it's sad because as a country, we waste so much food that really doesn't need to be waste. I mean, if people would, again, come out of their shells a little and open their eyes, and it was things I was learning at the same time. I didn't know that you could grind beans and make into refried beans. You know, that saves me so much time than putting the pot on the stove, cooking the beans for a couple hours, and then I can make my meal. You can grind beans and within 15 minutes, you have refried beans. And so it's that disconnect of, well, I don't know what to do with it. So I'm just not either going to use it, or I'm going to throw it away, or I just won't buy it. And I mean, especially when you take animals to the processor, you don't get your grocery store cuts 9 times out of 10. You know, you get back an arm roast. Well, I don't see an arm roast at the grocery store, so I don't know what to do with that. And that's our biggest hurdle, I think, with raising the livestock. We get it back and they're like, what's this pork shoulder roast? You know, I'm used to a pork loin roast. I mean, it's not the same cut, but it's still the same type of product. It's just different parts of the animal. And so it's that education where, hey, we need to get out of our little bubble a little. What we see in the grocery store, I mean, yes, that's fantastic. It's produced by farmers, but the processors don't really cut that way because you want the most bang for your buck when you process it. You don't want a ton of waste. And so they're going to cut it the best way possible. So when you get back an arm roast or pork shoulder roast and not your, you know, your pork loin, you cook it the same. It's just a different name.
Yeah.
And so it's that disconnect of how do we retrain our brains to go, hey, I have this, how do I use it? Instead of, I don't know how to use it, I'm just going to throw it out.
Mm-hmm. And it's learning to take advantage of different opportunities as a business, I think, too. Because when you think about those larger producers who are growing and on these contracts with, you know, whatever meat processor, that their meat is ending up at the grocery store, those processors have economies of scale and different markets that they can market those things that they're not putting in our grocery stores too. You know, they have markets for the organ meat, for the offal, for whatever. And smaller farmers don't necessarily have that.
So it's option.
Figuring out how to do that in a different way that you can still capture that profit from that and still be, you know, economically feasible at a completely different scale than those guys are.
Yeah.
I love that. Okay. So I love that you have kind of brought us full circle here. We talked about the growth of the farm, the growth of the pantry, and what that looked like, and how you guys are kind of trying to make them both connect to each other, even though they're very different pieces of the business. Tell us a little bit about where people can follow up with you if they're interested either in buying directly from you or finding some of these resources that you have available.
We are on Instagram. We don't have a large following, but we are. You can always contact us through Instagram. Our website has a box that you can send us a message. It also has my cell phone number on there. People can call and text me at any point in time. The email's on there. So we really have a wide variety of, however you want to contact me, there's Instagram and email. You can text or call me. The website is a good place too. So.
Awesome. And if they were going to go to your website and maybe look for something to dabble in first, or like a first thing to do with you guys, what would you suggest?
I like the boxes because it gives a little variety for everything. It's a big investment to go get a whole or half share. It's a big investment to do that when you don't know, I don't know if I'm going to like it. I mean, we feed differently than other people and every farm product's going to taste different. And so the boxes were designed to make it more cost effective, but also to try a little. And to be honest, we've had quite a few people email us or call me and say, hey, I don't really like this. Is there something else you could put together? And so we've put boxes together for people because they're like, hey, this is what I want. We don't care if you add in a few more things, but so we can always do custom boxes, but the boxes are the best. That way it gives you a variety of things to try.
Perfect. Well, I appreciate you being here today and sharing your journey with us. It is so encouraging to hear someone be open and honest about what it really looks like to be a beginning farmer and to have that, growth and learning experience along the way, whatever it looks like on a particular day. I kind of want to end, though, on a note of, what's the best thing that you guys have experienced or the biggest success that you're proud of throughout this journey?
Oh, you're gonna make me cry now.
Oh,
honestly, the best thing we ever did was for our kids. Even within this first 6 months of doing this, our kids completely changed for the better. They were more independent. It's taught them how to work, and seeing them excited to do all this, that's probably been the icing on the cake. I've always loved animals. This was always something I wanted to do, but because I didn't grow up in it, I just didn't know how to start. And so while it's selfish and it was fun for me, I think the best thing was watching my kids enjoy it. I mean, we still have those conversations. Hey, we can scale back. We can stop selling. We can do this. And my kids will look at us like we're crazy. Like, why would you do that? We like this, And so I think the best thing has been watching our kids grow because some of them have grown with this, but my older kids, they remember what it was like before we had this, and they were the ones that chose this, and just watching them grow and fall in love with this lifestyle. And I mean, when you ask them what they wanted to be, it used to be, I want to be a trash truck driver. And now my oldest is like, no, I want to be a farmer. And so it's taught them so many things that it's heartwarming and mind-blowing at the same time. Like what I've watched my kids accomplished in the last 5 years.
It's easy to see the pride in your eyes and how much you believe in what you guys are doing and the opportunities you're giving them. So I'm so happy for you. What are you most looking forward to that's next on the horizon for the farm and the pantry and the family?
Oh man, we've got some crazy goals this, and we don't even have a timeline on it, but we've got some crazy expanding things where we're wanting to start a micro dairy and do the raw milk and cheese, and we're now bringing in more meat birds and turkey products, and so we've got some crazy things to accomplish the next couple years. And so while we have those hurdles, we've got some pretty cool stuff coming up that there's not a lot of people in Arizona doing. So it's fun and terrifying at the same time.
I am excited for you guys and for what's next. Maybe here in a couple of years, we'll have to check back in and see where you are at then and what all has happened. So thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Well, thanks for having me.
If you've enjoyed spending time with us today, please take a moment to review the podcast on Apple Podcasts or join the conversation on social media. Do you have a topic you would like to discuss or know someone with a story to share? Apply to be a guest on the podcast at farmingonpurpose.com. You can follow the host of Farming on Purpose, Lexi, on your favorite social media platforms for more content by searching for Farming on Purpose. And remember, if you look around your table and aren't inspired by the people there, it's time to find a new seat.